The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is John Ivey for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sports Illustrated for Kids. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the April-May issue of Sports Illustrated for Kids. And we're going to begin today with who's who in sports, and we're going to go with the bottom line. And we have Saquon Barkley, Philadelphia Eagles running back. His height is 6 feet. His weight is 233 pounds. He was born February 9th, 1997, hometown, Copley, Pennsylvania. Following a season in which he became the ninth back to rush for more than 2,000 yards, Barkley was named the AP Offensive Player of the Year. Before signing with Philadelphia as a free agent in 2024, he had three 1,000-yard seasons for the Giants, who selected him with the second pick of the 2018 draft. Did you know, though, the last running back to be selected with the first overall pick was Kijana Carter of Penn State? He was selected by the Bengals in 1995. Chris Wood, Nottingham Forest forward. His height is 6'3". His weight is 181 pounds. He was born December 7th, day of infamy, 1991. Hometown, Auckland, New Zealand. Chris, the spark behind Nottingham Forest's surprising push for a Champions League bid this season, Wood scored 18 goals in his first 26 games. The year before, his first full campaign with the team, he netted 14 times as Forrest finished 17th. Wood is New Zealander's all-time leading scorer with 41 goals in 80 caps. Did you know? Nottingham Forest is the only team with more European Cups, now the Champions League titles, too, than domestic league championships, one. And finally, Rekia Jackson, Los Angeles Sparks forward. Her height is 6'2". She was born March 16, 2001, hometown Detroit, Michigan. After being selected fourth overall by the Sparks in the 2024 draft, Jackson was named to the WNBA All-Rookie Team. She averaged 13.4 points, 3.9 rebounds, and 1.5 assists per game. Jackson played at Mississippi State in Tennessee. She scored more than 1,000 points for each of the SEC schools. Did you know, though? Jackson was the 21st player from the University of Tennessee to be picked in the first round of the WNBA draft. Only UConn has had more. They're at 27. And let's move up to baseball, continuing the art of the steal. And here on page 40 to 41, the great steals. Luka Doncic, they practically stole him. In a lopsided deal that baffled fans, the Nuggets sent Luka Doncic to the Lakers before the 2025 trade deadline. His first LASIK card is in this issue. Master Thief, Ricky Henderson holds the record for the most stolen bases in Major League Baseball history with 1,406 over a 25-year career. Steal the series. Dave Roberts swipes second base, allowing him to score on a single in the 2004 American League Championship Series. The Red Sox stave off elimination to beat the Yankees in extra innings, propelling them to their first World Series title in 86 years. Just kidding! As part of one of the most famous rivalries in college sports, Army has stolen the Navy's mascot, Bill the Goat, at least 10 times in 75 years. There have been 38 Bills. Donde Esta? After a historic comeback against the Falcons to win Super Bowl 51, Tom Brady's game jersey goes missing from the locker room. It had been taken by a member of the press and was recovered in Mexico. Stolen by Bird. Larry Bird's interception of a Pistons inbounds pass leads to a game-winning layup for the Celtics and swings the momentum in the 1987 Conference Finals. Many Boston fans can quote verbatim Mike Gorman's iconic radio call to this day. And then finally, a steal at twice the price. Tickets to the Little League World Series are free prior to championship weekend, with seating on a first-come, first-served basis. 2025 Major League Baseball Preview. De La Cruz is at the forefront of Major League Baseball's stolen base revival. For decades, many successful teams were built around fast players, but as analytics became more and more popular, clubs began to place an emphasis on preserving their outs. In other words, a stolen base wasn't worth the risk of a player being caught. The last time Cincinnati won the World Series was in 1990. That year, they stole 166 bases, while the Montreal Expos led the league with 235. The league average was 127. Compare that with 2021, when only 15 of the 30 teams in the league stole more than 66 bases. That means half of the league's teams swiped for fewer bags than De La Cruz did on his own last year. A big reason for the new wave of the theft is that Major League Baseball instituted a series of rule changes in 2023. One limited the number of times a pitcher can throw a ball to a base to try to pick a runner off. The rule was designed to speed up the game, but it also gives would-be thieves a huge advantage because they know that once a pitcher has attempted two pickoffs, their next one has to result in an out or he will be charged with a balk. The second rule change made the bases 3 inches bigger. It might not seem like much, but the decreased distance between bases has proven just enough to give runners an incentive to steal more often. So players like De La Cruz are thriving while bringing one of the game's most exciting plays back to prominence. But the base paths aren't the only place where De La Cruz wows fans. A switch hitter, his first major league homer, traveled an incredible 458 feet, and he began his 2025 spring training season by hitting a home run from both sides of the plate in his first game. De La Cruz is also a graceful shortstop, a position usually manned by much shorter fielders. In the history of the game, only two players, 6'5" or taller, have played 100 games in a season at shortstop. De La Cruz and another up-and-coming star, Pittsburgh's O'Neill Cruz. In addition to a stick glove, De La Cruz has a cannon for an arm. His first week in the majors, one of his throws to first base was clocked in at 96 miles per hour. "It's how I play. Electric. I play with all I've got every day," he says. Put all of these physical gifts together and throw in an always present smile, and it's no wonder that De La Cruz has already become one of the most popular players in the game. Last August, at a road game in Miami, De La Cruz hit 2 home runs. Before each, a young fan in the stands near the dugout told him to hit one out of the park. So, after the game, De La Cruz sought out the youngster and gave him an autographed bat. "The best part of being a major league player is the love of the fans," he says. "That's something we dream of when we're little kids, and it came true for me." Major League Baseball Preview. Most likely to steal. A star in a trade. New York Yankees. For years, the Yankees were known for splashing out cash for free agents. Lately, though, GM Brian Cashman has been doing some wheeling and dealing, acquiring of Juan Soto and second baseman Jazz Chisholm Jr. in trades. Soto signed with the Mets in the offseason, but the Yankees' offense, which was third in the majors in runs scored in 2024, will be fine. What the team really needed the offseason was a lockdown closer, and they got their man in Devin Williams. The right-handed strikeout specialist has a career ERA of 1.83. To get him, Cashman only had to send the Brewers a minor leaguer and a middling star, Nestor Cortez, whom he replaced with a super free agent, Max Fried. Okay, some things never change. That leaves New York positioned to outlast the Orioles and the Red Sox for a third American League East title in four seasons, and possibly end the team's 15-year title drought. Your heart, Cleveland Guardians. The American League Central hasn't sent a team to the World Series since 2016. It's a division filled with mid-sized teams with limited resources. The squads all put on an emphasis on building internally, spending funds wisely, and playing hard. So, if you like grit, this is the division for you. And the Guardians embody that ethos better than any team. Cleveland put together a decent offense anchored by third baseman Jose Ramirez, who remains one of the most fun players in the game. The rotation is okay, but the franchise leaned into an area where players are relatively inexpensive, the bullpen. Guardians relievers had an ERA of 2.57, with four coming in under 2.0. Alas, the pen failed Cleveland in the American League Championship Series against the Yankees. The Central also sent the Tigers and the Royals to the postseason, and the Twins had a winning record. It'll be a fight for Cleveland to repeat as division champions, but that's what the Guardians do best. Houston Astros. Would the Astros ever live down the sign-stealing scandal that came to light after they won the 2017 World Series? Probably not. At least not anytime soon. But the fact remains that most of the players who were on the team 8 years ago are gone. The lone significant holder now that if Alec Bregman signed with the Red Sox as a free agent, is Jose Altuve, now 34, who is being moved from second base to the outfield. The chanting of the guard is nearly complete, and the team's leader is now D.H. Yordan Alvarez, who hit 35 home runs last year. He'll have to help make up for the loss not only of Bregman out of slugging of Kyle Tucker, who was traded to the Cubs. That may seem like a peculiar move for a team poised to win their division for the fifth year in a row, but the Astros can afford to have one eye on the future because the rest of the West is so uninspiring. Someone's Thunder, Atlanta Braves. The biggest part of the Major League Baseball offseason was, without a doubt, the Juan Soto sweepstakes, which was won by the Mets. New York has added arguably the best hitter in baseball to a team that won 89 games last year and nearly made it to the World Series. So they've got to be the team to beat, right? And if not the Mets, then the division has to belong to the Phillies, right? After all, Philly won 95 games last year. Not so fast. The Braves suffered a brutal 2024 season that saw them lose their best pitcher, Spencer Strider, and hitter, Ronald Acuna Jr., to injuries. Strider should make up for the loss of Max Fried in free agency, while a healthy Acuna could revive an offense that scored a whopping 947 runs 2 years ago. Atlanta made the wild card without the pair last year. With them, sorry Mets, the Braves will be the big story in the East. Chicago Cubs. Someone will win the National League Central this year, because the rules require someone to win the National Central this year. So it might as well be the Cubs. Last year, Chicago was 83-79 without a big bat in the lineup. So the team went out and traded for Houston outfielder Kyle Tucker, who hit 23 homers despite missing more than half the season. The Cubs won't blow away the field, but in a division where no other team, not even year's division champs, the Brewers or Eli De La Cruz's Red Sox, project to even finish 500. They don't have to. They just need to skate into the players where they could actually be very dangerous. With 55, Dansby Swanson, second baseman, Nico Horner, and center fielder Pete Crow Armstrong, Chicago is incredibly strong up the middle defensively. The club also have the top heavy rotation and a very solid bullpen. All tactics traits a team needs to make a surprising October run. The show, Los Angeles Dodgers. The Dodgers won 98 games in the World Series last year. Not bad. So what did they do in the offseason? Well, they spent around $300 million to bring in, oh, everybody, Japanese pitching phenom Roki Sasaki, former Cy Young winner Blake Snell, lefty Tanner Short, who had an unheard of 4.0 WAR out of the bullpen last year. Another reliever, Kirby Yates, who had a .17 ERA for the Rangers. LA's pitching is so deep they could start the season with a six-man rotation, and at some point they'll welcome Shohei Ohtani back to the hill. He didn't pitch last season but still pulled his weight, becoming the career member of the charter member of the 50-50 Homer Steals Club. The Diamondbacks, who actually had a more potent offense than the Dodgers last year, and added former Cy Young winner Corbin Barnes and Pedro's Padres, both looked solid playoff contenders. But like everyone else, they're playing for second. Cross my heart. Just kidding. Pages 46 and 47. NBA players and coaches love to deliver a bold press conference claim. Too often they end up eating crow. I'm not trying to dunk at all. Y'all think I'm lying. I'm dead serious. Bye-bye, Butler. Missed flights, leaving practice, and tons of talk, Jimmy Butler's antics made it clear he wanted out of Miami. But even President Pat Riley squashed the rumors of a trade when he said in December, "We are not trading Jimmy Butler." Fast forward to February 5th. Butler was traded to the Warriors. Slam jam. I'm not trying to dunk at all. Y'all think I'm lying. I'm dead serious. Ja Morant went off after a 2024 game against the Mavericks, claiming he would never dunk again to protect himself against injury. Days later, in a game against Boston, he threw down a reverse jam in magnificent Ja manner. Plates of crow, 3 out of 4, okay? Guaranteed. Detroit's Rasheed Wallace issued his first guarantee in the 2024 playoffs, and it worked. 2 years later, in the semis, he broke out another one. I know we're going to win it. Y'all can quote me. Put it back page, front page, whatever. Alas, the Cavs won 2 in a row. The Pistons did not win the series, sparring Wallace more humiliation. I quit. I'm back. When Michael Jordan announced his return to the NBA in 1995, after a brief retirement, everyone celebrated his famous words, "I'm back." In 1999, his airness retired again, which led to a major whiplash for fans when he returned in 2001. It wasn't until 2003 when he retired from the NBA for the third and final time. Call me Servant. Back in 2014, Kevin Durant clearly didn't like the nickname, the Slim Reaper. He suggested an alternative, something along the lines of the Servant. Fans hated it, forcing Durant to immediately call takebacks. I was definitely joking around about the Servant thing. You can call me Kevin. You can call me KD. Okay, KD. Here's your two eating crows. Emily Navarro, Women's Tennis Tour. Nice picture of Emily here on page 48. Reaching for a nice forehand get. Inspired by her grandfather, a former football coach, the 23-year-old has cracked the top 10 and become one of the brightest stars in the world of tennis. Last year, Emma Navarro played the biggest match of her short career. In the round of 16 at the United States Open, she faced Coco Gauff. Here were the two best American players under 25 years old, confronting each other on Labor Day weekend in New York, at the one major held stateside. The match was loaded with pressure and expectation. There were 25,000 or so fans in the stands and millions watching on TV and streaming. Gauff was not just a defending United States Open champion. A few weeks earlier, she had joined LeBron James as the American flag bearer at the Paris Olympics after appearing on the cover of SI Kids. Navarro, meanwhile, was still on the kind of player who could put on a hat and walk the ground without being recognized. That's fine with her. In a decisive third set, Navarro pressured Gauff, who coughed up errors and double faults. Gauff played with a look of anguish and on her face, while Navarro wore a mask of steely resolve. When Navarro won, she smiled thinly, pinched her fist, and celebrated as though she had expected to win all the time. During the match, the cameras were quick to cut away to Navarro's coach, Peter Ayers, seated between Navarro's parents. Ayers had helped fashion Navarro's battle plan and provided encouragement throughout the afternoon. But as ever, Navarro had also leaned on the wisdom of another coach. While this one played tennis only at a recreational level, he had perhaps more than anyone shaped Navarro's principles as an athlete. And he was there from the beginning. Most grandparents are. Family first. After graduating college and serving in the Air Force, Frank Navarro embarked on a football coaching career. By his early 30s, he had become a head coach, traveling from Williams College to Columbia, then to Wabash College in Princeton. Coaching at elite academic schools came with limits. Few of his kids had ambitions of playing beyond college. Still, Navarro figured out that at smaller colleges, he could really know his players and shape their lives beyond football. At each stop, he was an old-school disciplinarian, handing out push-ups to players who lacked punctuality or accountability. If you dropped a pass in the end zone, he wouldn't say a word, says one former player. If you were late, that's when you'd hear all about it. But he was also open to the innovations like the spread offense and the monster defense he helped devise. Frank and his wife, Jill, parented their eight kids much in the same way he coached. By the mid-1990s, their son, Ben, was living in South Carolina with his wife, Kelly, and their four kids. Frank and Jill would spend winters there. Frank noticed it was hard not to note that Emma had an athlete's skill set, but also an athlete's mindset. Emma tells the story of competing in a swim meet when she was 10. She lost the race by inches. While she was on the verge of tears, Frank was smiling. "You lost by a meatball," he joked. She says that even then, she got the message. That was a way of showing that it didn't matter that I lost. I tried to my hardest, and I'd been practicing really hard, and I put it out there. Eventually, she funneled her efforts and energies into tennis. Frank revved up his minivan and arrived in front of the house at 5:45 a.m. every morning to shuttle his granddaughters to practice it before school. Without turning the rides into lectures, he would impart subtle lessons. He would pepper her with trivia questions and historical facts, a way of reinforcing that there was more to life than tennis. He would never complain about the cold or rain or the 5:45 darkness. So, she says, I wouldn't either. At practice, Frank would sit in silence, sipping coffee and leaving the technical tennis coaching to the hired expert. But on the drive to school, he would impress upon his granddaughter the importance of preparation, steadiness, and worrying more about improving constantly than winning constantly. At 5'7", Emma wasn't going to blast anyone off the court with flagrant power, but poise was her gift. In the juniors, she won match after match with her temperament. She would keep her head while opponents would lose theirs. By the time she was a high school senior, she was the top tennis recruit in the country. At Virginia, she went 25-1 as a freshman. She avenged her only loss of the season in the finals of the 2021 NCAA tournament, a few days before Frank passed away at age of 91. Barely a year later, Navarro set off on a pro career. By last fall, she had represented the United States at the Paris Olympics and was in the top 10. At Grandpa Frank's, wisdom, she says, is a constant companion as she tries to build on her success. I think I don't need necessarily have the unshakable confidence that he had yet. Maybe I'm working towards it. But I love to do things in my own unique way. I never want just to fit in with the crowd or do what everybody else is doing. I think we're similar in that way. We've run out of time for today's episode of Sports Illustrated for Kids. I'm reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. This is John Ivey. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sports Illustrated for Kids is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. We'll be right back.